All right, thank you, Your Honor.
I am Mark Workman, registration number 15682, a representative on Craig in this motion to modify child support with the associated issue of Ms. Craig's motion to modify post-secondary education expense. When the parties were divorced in 2002, or signed their separation agreement in 2002, the divorce actually was completed in 2003. The parties were pro se. They used a fill-in-the-blank judicial form. That judicial form had a number of sections in it, and I'm sure the court has seen, looking at the record on appeal, that the last form in the separation agreement was a form for an entry for post-secondary education expense. That post-secondary education expense, you have to imagine parties getting divorced, filling out this judicial form, doing it themselves, and they get through their discussion about how they are going to accomplish their separation, and they come to the last section, and it is post-secondary education expense. That form says on it, the court is not allowed, or the parties must ask the court if they wish for post-secondary education expense, which is actually incorrect, but was not an issue before the trial court when we had a motion to modify. I just wanted to give to the court that information to start out with, to consider how the parties get to where they are when we come to our hearing before Judge Kopkow in March of 2011.
Going along those lines, paragraph 21 of the separation agreement had each of the parties checking off boxes for tuition, for room and board, for books, for fees, for travel, and they each agreed to pay 50% of every expense.
Yes.
So then looking at the statute, then the only question is whether there was a substantial or continuing change.
That's the only issue.
That's a legal issue before us. Okay.
That is, Your Honor, and I appreciate that. But at the same time, I think it's relevant to considering what is a substantial and continuing change of circumstance, because we have to look at what the circumstance was when the agreement was entered and what it is when the hearing occurs.
So what is the substantial and continuing change in this case?
The substantial and continuing change in this case was my client's total inability to fund her daughter's college education. She was a close and loving mother. Her daughter was living with her. Her fondest wish would have been to fund her daughter's education, but she simply did not have the money. She was a victim of economic times. She did not have the resources. She was working 64 hours a week, both at a full-time day job and being a babysitter at night. And she had just declared bankruptcy. Her husband was just losing his job as a manager at First National Bank. And she didn't have any money saved. And there she sat. And she was just unable to pay this expense. And there were a number of other arguments and issues that I raised in my brief, but really the issue we get to is simple at its heart. It's just an inability to pay. Judge Kopkow, I believe he had been on the bench for a few weeks at the time of our hearing. And I don't know how many times he had dealt with this type of issue, but it was my feeling as a practitioner in this area for 25 plus years that he had an inordinate focus on what you typically look at when you look at a change in circumstances, and that is the income levels of the parties. And the income levels were not all that different. In fact, as my colleague points out in his brief, the mother was doing better than she had been at the time of the separation agreement signing, and the father was doing worse, as the court found. But if there is no money to pay, that has got to be a relevant consideration for the court.
Correct me, Mr. Workman, if I'm wrong about this. I'm not sure that the judge
disagrees with what you just said or disagreed. He seemed to me to focus on that you hadn't shown a continuing change, and then he talked about the recession and, you know, suggesting it was cyclical. But you raised, there are two arguments I'd appreciate your addressing. One, what was the evidence that your clients clearly drastic financial situation would be continuing? And then you made your principal legal argument to us that the court didn't consider all these circumstances. I'd be curious what's your basis for that. So two questions for you. Well, why is it let's continue? What evidence showed continuing? And how do we know in the record, what in the record suggests the judge didn't consider everything?
There was a financial affidavit that was submitted by my client. That financial affidavit did describe how much money she had in her savings or available to fund a college education. The child in question was 19 years old as of the date of the hearing, and this makes me think of another issue, but in answering your question, she didn't have the money. She didn't have the money to send the child to Colorado State University, and it was time for the child to go to college. And she just simply did not have the resources, nor did she have the ability, given her husband's loss of job, and given she's working 64 hours a week, she didn't have the ability to save that amount of money in such a short period of time as before the hearing. And there is not...
excuse me to interrupt you, but I'll lose the thought, but was there evidence of her inability to find, or her new husband with inability for him to find other work, or any evidence that this situation was going to continue?
We did not focus on her husband's ability or inability to find work. As a matter of fact, the truth of the matter is on the day of the hearing is when he found out that he was being laid off from First National Bank. So, no, there was not evidence to that effect. There was not evidence that, we could all hope that she could win the lottery, she could find employment at a much greater rate of pay. And no, she did not testify to every aspect such as that at the hearing. And the one thing I wanted to address earlier was when I was talking about how these hearings go. You know, the hearing wasn't a picture of clarity, as with much larger issues many times. When there's millions of dollars being discussed, hearings are very well staged and presented, and pretrial activities happen. But this hearing was a chaotic hearing, and much of it was done through offers of proof and question and answer from the judge. And then when it got to be 5 o'clock, our time was up. And that was the circumstance. Now, to address your second question, Judge Kopkow, I cited in my brief much of what he stated about it. And he just said, there's just not a change of circumstance.
I'm interested in that part of it. What I don't hear from you is, what was the circumstance before the hearing,
yes,
at the time they got into this agreement and got their divorce, versus the new circumstance that you're saying is a change?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. There was at the time of the separation, there was a financial affidavit filed. Each party divided a marital estate that included retirement accounts that were at or near $50,000 each.
She had $50,000 at the time of separation.
Yes.
Okay, what else?
And I believe there was a house, and but she no longer had that, and the equity within that house. And then at the time of the hearing, she no longer had those assets. But the father did. The father had about $75,000 cash that he admitted that he had.
But he had that at the time of the divorce.
I believe he had similar assets at the time of the divorce, yes.
So nothing changed there, but what I'm trying to get at, what is different about wife? I think this is the question Judge Roman was trying to drive at.
Yes. Well, she had no assets. She had nothing.
She had spent all the assets you described, the $50,000, the half interest in the house.
She had.
And then her support got cut too, right? her child support got cut as well.
Yes, it did.
And is that something that should be factored in into this changed circumstances analysis?
Yes, I think she has less ability to provide for college education at that point. There, and I think I'll stop here and reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Workman. Russell?
May it please the court, my name is Mike Samuelson, attorney registration 40572, appearing on behalf of the appellee Edward Thompson, who I will try to refer to as father and the appellant as mother. Today what I'd like to do is focus most of my time on the only real issue we believe is properly before this court, whether the trial court properly applied the substantial and continuing change of circumstance test when it determined that it would not modify the party's post-secondary provision of their separation agreement. If there's any additional time, I'd also like to address a few of the issues we don't believe were preserved for appeal, and of course, answer any questions that the judge may have.
And my question then is the same to you. What was wife's condition at the time of divorce versus what it is now? The allegation is that she had some $50,000 in cash and half interest in the house, and now she has none of that. She has zero resources and has filed bankruptcy. Why is that not a continuing change of circumstance?
And the $50,000, I'd have to look back at the record. I don't know what type of assets she had at the time of the...
Well, that's the key issue here. Is there a change in circumstance? So why is there not a change in circumstance?
I think the substantial and continuing change of circumstance test is, by its very nature, a two-part test. It can't just be a change of circumstance, it has to be continuing. So we never disputed the fact that the mother had less assets available to her from the time of at the separation agreement to the time of the hearing in 2011.
So we have...
Go ahead, Judge.
Thank you, Judge. So we've established that she went from 50,000. I don't hear you disputing that so much. We can go back and look in the record.
Correct.
Regardless. Half interest in the house. And now she's filed for bankruptcy. She has no assets. She testified she has no ability to pay. So assuming for purposes of this question that that's a substantial change, why do you believe she was unable to prove a continuing, that she failed to establish that it was a continuing change?
At the hearing, the Judge Kapkow focused on the fact that there's a recession going on, the economy is in bad shape. And that, more or less, that was the only discussion on that point. That was the judge's determination that her financial condition at that time was not continuing, that that either she or her husband would get a better paying job.
Is there any evidence to support that finding, that they were going to get employed, things were going to change?
There is no testimony concerning that.
So there was no evidence to support that finding?
As I recall, yes, there was no evidence.
Well, let me ask you, following up on that, you in your own brief say there's a rebuttable, and I think you're right, there's a rebuttable presumption concerning modification of child support when application of the child support guidelines would result in more than a 10% change in the amount due. I think you get a presumption that it's a substantial and continuing change. Here, I think you conceded in your brief, as I recall it, that there was more than 10% change based on the rejection of child support that you won. So now we have a presumption that there's a substantial continuing change, I think, and you're telling us there's no evidence otherwise. How did you rebut the presumption?
First of all, I'd like to...
And if I misstated it, go for it.
Yeah, I'd like to answer that question by starting off with, before oral argument, I looked back at the case law, In Re Marriage of Charlotte, or however you pronounce that case, and as my colleague has alleged, that based on In Re Marriage of Charlotte, in a post-secondary modification hearing, the trial court shall consider the same factors as a child support hearing. And what I looked at when I read In Re Marriage of Charlotte the first time, I did not realize that that case was citing to CRS 1410.115.1.5D, which this statute has been amended. That subsection no longer exists in that place. It's now at subsection 15K. 1.5, the former 1.5D and the current subsection 15 both only apply to support orders that were entered before July 1st, 1997. So on that basis, there's no statutory requirement, there's no case law requiring the trial court to review the same factors in a post-secondary modification as in a child support modification hearing. In that statute that we were just referring to, the 10% rebuttable presumption, it strictly applies to in a modification of a child support matter. So to answer your question, looking back now, I don't believe that 10% rule even applies here. And I think there's a couple reasons why I don't believe it's relevant. First of all, the parties agreed to split post-secondary expenses 50-50, not based upon what the child support guidelines dictate. Therefore, a 10% change in what the child support guidelines, I don't believe, is relevant to what the post-secondary expenses would be.
I'm confused, Mr. Sermerson, and it may be me, and I apologize. So what standard do you think applies on the post-secondary education expenses to establish modification? Well, I guess you started, I think, by saying they have to prove a substantial and continuing change. That's still the law, correct?
Correct. That In Re Marriage of Charlotte clearly states that.
Okay. And so I'm trying to catch up to you here. So you think that the rebuttal presumption no longer applies to post-secondary education expenses?
Exactly.
Is that, but it does apply if it was just a modification of child support. That's
correct.
Your...
Correct.
Okay. And that's because, I guess you'll have to feed this to me again, and I apologize, because I get the statute was amended, so you're saying this post-secondary the provision that was post-secondary expenses was amended, but that provision didn't have the 10% presumption, did it?
No, that 10% presumption is in CRS 1410.122.
Right.
The first paragraph says, in a modification of child support hearing or something to that effect, that it only applies to child support, not post-secondary. And just to maybe to clarify things a little bit, my understanding is that before July 1st, 1997, a trial court could order the parties to pay a certain percentage of post-secondary expenses. After July 1st, 1997, the trial court had no authority to do that. That was completely up to the parties whether they wanted to agree to that, which they did in this case. Along those same lines, as my colleague has argued, he's stating the trial court erred when applying the substantial and continuing test, change of circumstance test, by not applying all of the factors from CRS 1410.115.2b. But based on what I've just said about the trial court's not required to consider the same factors in a post-secondary modification as in a child support modification, there's no authority requiring the trial court to consider the CRS 1410.115.2b factors.
If the court is not required to consider all those factors, the test remains the same, though, substantial and continuing change of circumstances?
Correct.
That doesn't prevent the court from considering those factors, right?
Correct. If there's relevant issues in there, there's nothing preventing the court. There's just no requirement that the court has to look at those factors.
It seemed to me we still get back to where we started, and that's what did she have before and what does she have after? That's relevant, isn't it?
Yes, I agree that's relevant.
And you're conceding that she had something, $50,000 and half an interest in the house, and now she doesn't have that.
Correct.
Is that correct?
And like I said.
And also, there's no evidence that, to support the court's finding that things are going to get better. As relevant to the continuing, portion of this test.
Yeah, I believe it's correct that there was no evidence presented about whether the current situation was a lasting situation or whether it was temporary.
Well, was there a finding of a continuing change, that there was no continuing change of circumstances by the trial court? Did the trial court make a specific finding about that as to mother?
And I can't quote exactly what the trial court said, but what he, more or less what he said is, I find there's no substantial and continuing change of circumstances, emphasizing continuing. And then he talked about the state of the economy, the recession.
Now, would the trial court be required to only look at mother's situation or also stepfather's in that light, in that context?
I do not know the answer to that question. I believe, I don't know whether the stepfather, I don't believe the stepfather has a requirement to provide for the minor child for his stepdaughter.
Okay, thank you. Because with regard to mother, there was no finding that she was underemployed either, was there? I mean, the only evidence was that she worked 64 hours a week, right?
Correct.
There was no finding that she was underemployed, though, was there?
No, there was no finding she was underemployed.
Okay.
Was there, and I know we're probably all beating dead horse on here, was there, I think you're right, the court said there's no substantial continuing change, the court said it focused on continuing and talked about the recession. Was there any evidence about the recession? I mean, I suppose what you're telling us is that mother didn't satisfy her burden of proof to show, to sustain the modification, but what I'm also hearing is there's no evidence to support what the court found. That's what's hanging me up. So what was the evidence, if nothing else, that the recession was going to continue or not going to continue? That seems to be the only finding the court made on why it wasn't continuing, is that we're in a recession. What's the basis for that finding?
My understanding is the court took judicial notice of the state of the economy. There was no testimony concerning.
All right. I suppose I'm not sure the court could take judicial notice of that, but I'm not hearing you say the court took judicial notice of the fact that the recession is not going to continue either way.
Yeah, I guess I don't know how to answer that question aside from there was no testimony concerning the economy. That was just something the court took upon itself to apply to the facts of this case. But what you did mention earlier is, which I'm assuming I don't even need to mention, but it is the party that's petitioning for the modification. It's their burden to prove substantial and continuing change of circumstance. Here, what has been alleged in the brief before this court is that the trial court didn't consider all of these factors and evidence. But the truth of the matter is, the mother never attempted to introduce any evidence about a lot of the issues that they are now claiming are the basis for this appeal. There's case law out there, I believe In Re Marriage of Aldrich is one of them. In that case, the father petitioned for a modification of child support, and on appeal, he alleged the trial court erred by not considering certain factors. Just like in this case, that the father never raised those factors at the trial court level.
That's an interesting question that you raised. What evidence did she present?
She presented evidence about her income, her assets, her debt.
As they exist at the time of the hearing.
Correct.
Did she present evidence of what existed at the time of dissolution?
The trial court took judicial notice of the sworn financial statement that was filed at the time of separation.
They separate and they support the idea that she did have assets at that time.
Yes, that financial affidavit would clarify exactly what type of assets she had at the time.
Why doesn't that meet her burden of proof?
It may or may not meet her burden of proof that there was a change of circumstances. Not that there was a continuing change of circumstances.
Saying it's her burden to put on evidence that of a recession and the effect of a recession?
That's her burden to prove that her situation is continuing. However she chooses to do that, I believe it's her choice or her attorney's choice. I don't know that it necessarily has to be the state of the economy, but something to the effect of whether she is currently looking for other jobs, that type of thing would be relevant. I see my time is up. And
thank you, Mr. Thomason.
Thank you.
Right, if I may, Your Honor, your discussion and your leadership is very much appreciated because it helps me focus and think about these issues. I was thinking to myself, the next time I set a post-secondary education expense modification hearing, it's going to be a 2 or 3 day hearing, and I'm not going to get that hearing. As a practical matter, these judges, you know, I appear in front of them frequently. They have demands on themselves, and I'm just trying to think about how I could present that evidence of a recession. And by the time I got done with that hearing, we could have paid for the post-secondary education expense.
Well, counsel,
the cost of the hearing.
Well, counsel, how did you meet your burden in this case?
I have to rely on the financial affidavits, and I have to also confess that I could have done a better job. But there is an amount of time that is allotted when you set these hearings. The court suggests how much time you should take, and you can ask for more and get a little more. But I don't mean to excuse make, because it is my job to meet my burden of proof at the hearing, and I have to rely on the financial affidavits to do that.
Well, it's both the financial affidavits, and I'm just trying to make sure I understand. I'm not putting words in your mouth. It's the financial affidavits that showed a change of circumstances, and if nothing else, we know that your client got a huge cut in her child support, which I suppose there was no particular endpoint. Right,
he was paying child support.
Right, I said it backwards. Your client is no longer getting that money. She took a hit on the money she was receiving.
Yes.
That at least had no endpoint that we know of.
Yes.
So I suppose arguably that made a prima facie case of continuing. I'm not sure that's true because I'm not clear how this. I understand the hearing could be a little chaotic and people taking judicial notice. I mean, that's what you have. I gather you didn't put on any specific evidence it would be continuing. So the record is what it is.
Yes.
True. Okay.
And I took a moment and looked back at my file and reminded myself, how could I forget? The father actually had $331,000 of income or of assets at the time of the hearing in March of 2011. He had $25,000 at the time of the dissolution. He kept the marital residence. I had that backwards. And the mother had $25,000, and I do believe I got it right in my statement of facts in my brief. But this is a big issue. This is a big issue across Colorado for families, and there are a number of issues that I did raise in my brief that I didn't present a lot of evidence about, but it is within our jurisdiction. We present statements of relief requested in an attempt to be thorough and bring up all our issues. And I do recall that Judge Kopkow at the beginning of the hearing made a statement to the effect of Mr. Workman's talking about vagueness and all of these things. And this indicated to me at the beginning of the hearing that he understood that I was making these other arguments that I put in my statement of relief requested and that I put in my motion about, okay, so does this mean that my client must pay 50% of Oxford room board tuition expense? And for that matter, How long does this obligation go on for? Could my client be on in her elderly years, and her daughter is 40, and it's time for her to pay? And so there is a need for some direction in a larger sense for these kinds of issues across the state of Colorado. And that's part of the reason that I took this upon myself to file this appeal, in the hope that I could help those many families that are on all sides of this issue, and we could give them some direction. And of course, you know, they need good legal advice, but we know that more than 50%, and I think it's more like 75% of the people who go to court for divorces are pro se, and they are filling out those judicial forms. And the judicial form that they filled out in this case was suggested the idea of post-secondary education expense. And you can only imagine that they're at the conclusion of a difficult discussion about how to separate their lives. And you get to the last question, so are we going to send our kids to college? And the form suggests it. And what good parent is going to say no to that? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Workman. We thank both counsel for their briefs and arguments in this case. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. That